212.
Yeah,
this is Michael Franti here from Spearhead, and you're listening to Indie Media's London Radio, connecting London with the rest of the planet. Stand firm, stay human, hold the vibes, and give the corporation some complications.
Every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, it's the Indie Media Radio London Newswire Show, coming at you from the streets of London, Infinity and beyond on Resonance FM 104.4.
It's Wednesday. It's 1 o'clock. It's time for the Indie Media Radio London show, brought to you on Resonance FM 104.4, bringing protest stories direct from the streets, posted onto the indiemedia.org.uk newswire and to global indie media sites worldwide. We look forward to presenting your stories, so keep posting them to indiemedia.org.uk. And welcome to the show. It's just after Christmas. If you celebrate Christmas, it's also just after Hanukkah. If you celebrate Hanukkah, and wishing everybody the best of seasons, greetings, and hope it wasn't too stressful at home with the family. We're going to start the show today. We're going to have a singer who's come in especially to sing the Diggers song. We have Sam with the Diggers song.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they call the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the land in common and to make the wastelands grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of poverty we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor folk starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the landlords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Thank you very much. I think that's a brilliant song for this time of year. Coming up on the show today, we're hopefully going to have more songs from Sam, and we're also going to be reporting back on the peace activists that tried to get into Bethlehem. We have some breaking news on that story, and we'll be speaking to the mayor of Bethlehem later and to the press spokesperson for the peacemakers that tried to enter Israel to get to Bethlehem to attend a peace conference. But right now, we have a story that was posted to the Newswire. An activist allegedly committed suicide in a US jail. At 7 a.m. on the 22nd of November, Bill Rogers, a longtime community activist, arrested as part of a nationwide crackdown on radical activists in the US, was found dead in his cell. The authorities have called it a suicide. On the 8th of December, six activists were arrested across the US in a series of coordinated arrests by federal marshals. These arrests are part of a nationwide crackdown on radical activists. At 7 a.m. on the 22nd of December, one of the indicated activists was found dead in his cell. The authorities claim it was a suicide. Bill Rogers, 40, a longtime community activist from Arizona, where he ran the Catalyst InfoShop bookstore out of his home, was found dead. For more information or to see how people can find out more about Bill's life work, see www.supportbill.org. We have a statement from the Friends of the Catalyst. We mourn the passing of our dear friend and community member Bill Rogers, who worked tirelessly for the causes of social justice and environmental sustainability. We ask that he be remembered as the gentle, kind and compassionate person we all knew and loved here in Prescott, US. We remain committed to the continuing the work of community building and ecological awareness through the Catalyst InfoShop as part of the legacy Bill helped to create. We wish our friend the peace and serenity that he strives so hard to create in this world. This is a great loss for our community. We love you, Bill. Now, more about the arrests. These arrests were carried out with the retroactive use of the USA Patriot Act. Although all the actions in question took place before the 11th of September 2001, this new piece of anti-terror legislation was used retrospectively to procure search warrants and to allow for searches across the United States. This is a new and dangerous legal precedent being set. The activists that were arrested desperately need letters and reading materials to be sent to them. I don't know if people across London would send stuff to the United States, but if you wanted to, that would be fab. Please write them letters. But don't forget that all letters sent to prisons or jails will obviously be read by the authorities. Please don't say anything about the pending cases or charges. And especially, please don't forget that these activists, as far as the poster knows, are pleading not guilty. Although the actions were claimed by the ELF and the ALF, that's the Animal Liberation Front, these particular activists may have had nothing to do with the actions and in some cases insist they have no affiliation or involvement in the ELF or ALF. They are well-known activists in the US and are possibly being framed so as to ensure that they will spend the rest of their days in prison. There is no address for the sixth activist because he is now cooperating with the US authorities. For more information about how to write to the prisoners, see www.anarchistblackcross.org/support/writing. I've got the addresses here, so if you get a pen and paper, I will read the addresses out at the end of the show, but if you have a pen and paper handy, if you're a regular listener, hopefully you do have. Daniel McGowan, his prisoner number is 1407167, and he's in Lane County Jail, 101 West 5th Street, Eugene. That's USA. Daniel is being shifted between two facilities unpredictably, so there's actually a second address because he's being moved to another prison, which is Daniel McGowan, new prisoner number, 63794-053. That's FDC Sheridan, PO Box 6000, Sheridan. That's Oregon 97378, USA. Chelsea Garlach, and that's 1308678, is her prison number, and she's in Lane County Jail. That's 101 West 5th Avenue, Eugene. And Kevin Tubbs, which is 121-3751, Lane County Jail, 101 West 5th Avenue, Eugene, Oregon, 97401, USA. Lane County Jail will not accept letters written on coloured paper, nor will they accept letters which have been corrected with liquid correction fluid, what in Britain is known as Tipex, and what in America is called whiteout. The authorities are also rejecting letters if they come in an envelope over a quarter of an inch thick. That's approximately 6 millimetres in metric. Basically, they are using any excuse whatsoever to reject mail. So please, when you're writing, please write on white paper with a black pen, or if you print your letters on a computer, print your letter with black ink again onto white sheets of paper. We have another address for a prisoner, which is Sarah Harvey, Coconino County Jail. That's 951 East Sawmill Road, Flagstaff, Arizona, 86001, USA. Okay, we're now going to move to some music.
Another man down, another woman gone, and our troubled world stumbles on. In the fight against terror and tyranny's sting, What have you done to help freedom ring? Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? Did you pay back your brother for fixing the vote? Some fat federal contracts took care of that note. Spit on the memory of those who fought and died in the American struggle for voting rights. Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? Did your family friends get their greedy hands on our public treasure, our wilderness lands? Punch holes in the earth and burn out the sky. More profits for Dick, Condi, and the guy. Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? Did you do what you like and defy common sense? Beat the drums of war and call it defense. Roll out the new weapons, sell the old ones overseas, and we'll never have to stop killing for peace. Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? Our nation is run by a rule of law, free speech, equal rights, and justice for all. If you want to do something to help freedom ring, act more like a president and less like a king. Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? Freedom ring! Freedom ring! Freedom ring! What have you done to help freedom ring? What can we do to help freedom ring? What will we do to help freedom ring? What will we do to help freedom ring? Freedom ring, freedom ring. Freedom ring, freedom ring. Freedom ring, freedom ring. What will we do to help freedom ring?
So more on the story before, where we were reading out the people that have been arrested retrospectively for alleged offences in 2001. Agents linked suspects in Oregon and elsewhere to a 3-year string of crimes. The government Thursday announced the most extensive bust of eco-saboteurs in US history, charging 7 people with a series of arsons and vandalisms that plagued the Pacific Northwest for nearly 3 years. Those arrested include a Portland woman accused of taking part in the nation's only act of sabotage on the eve of the 2000 millennium celebration, the toppling of a high-voltage tower near a place called Bend. Federal agents took 6 women and men into custody from Oregon to New York on Wednesday, tying them to nearly $5 million in arson and vandalism damage from 1998 to 2001. The crimes turned Oregon at that time into the epicentre of an underground assault on timber companies, research scientists and meat processors. Federal agents say the saboteurs operating in small units called cells have burned, vandalised and sometimes bombed enterprises that they accuse of profiting from the destruction of the planet and its living creatures. Members of Oregon's FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force worked the cases for the better part of 9 years, though they developed suspects early in the investigation. Members of the task force told the Oregonian in July 2001 that they had tied five Northwest arsons, including two collected to Wednesday's arrest, to signature firebombs made of cheap digital timers and large containers of fuel. The task force then reported that it was closing in on at least three suspects and several compatriots, but no arrests were made. The government declined to comment on Thursday about why arrests were so long in coming. However, a federal prosecutor in Portland, Kent, Robinson, noted that Wednesday's coast-to-coast roundup was coordinated to avoid suspects fleeing after learning of other arrests. These indictments prove that we're going to pursue these arsons until we solve them, said Robinson, who leads the criminal division for Origin U.S. attorney Karen J. Immergut, and we're still investigating. Authorities arrested Chelsea D. Gerlach, 28 years old, Wednesday in Portland. Also arrested, according to prosecutors, was Kevin M. Tubbs, 36, in Springfield. Stanislas G. Meyerhoff, 28, in Charlottesville, where he attended Piedmont Community College. And Sarah K. Harvey, 28, in Flagstaff, where she was a student at Northern Arizona University. The government also arrested Daniel G. McGowan, 31, of New York, and William C. Rogers, 40, of Prescott, Arizona. Robinson acknowledged that the federal authorities employed a provision of the USA Patriot Act to close in on the alleged saboteurs. The law allowed them to obtain search warrants from U.S. Magistrate Judge Thomas M. Coffin in Eugene and search in other states for evidence. According to the indictments, the accused saboteurs first struck on June the 21st, 98, with simultaneous fires at two U.S. Department of Agriculture research facilities in the Olympia area. The Animal Liberation Front and Earth Liberation Front, groups that the FBI later described as America's greatest domestic terrorist threat, claimed responsibility for the fires. The arrogant humans who make money by killing and destroying nature would have the public believe that beaver, deer and other wildlife are responsible for the decimation of our public lands, not clear-cutting, is the protesters' comment. Tubbs and Rogers were charged with setting fire to one of the USDA buildings. The next arson came 2 days after Christmas in 1998, when US Forest Industries in Medfund was firebombed, causing at least $500,000 in damage. The Earth Liberation Front claimed responsibility. The government has charged Harvey with arson in that case. Saboteurs struck again on Mother's Day 1999 in Eugene when Childers Meat Co. went up in flames. A criminal complaint filed Thursday accuses Gerlach, who went by the name Country Girl, of serving as a lookout in that arson. The indictment quotes a confidential source as saying that Gerlach used a handheld radio to communicate with fellow saboteurs. The source told an FBI agent, John Ferreria, that the informant was a participant in conspiracy to commit arson. The source said that these persons used 4 5-gallon plastic containers, each triggered by a mechanical timing device. According to the complaint, one incendiary device was set near the front door in a porch area, and the other incendiary device was set next to a natural gas main. The Animal Liberation Front later claimed responsibility for the Childers fire, which caused $1.2 million in damage, according to the government. On December the 30th, 1999, an electrical transmission tower owned by the Bonneville Power Administration was toppled about 25 miles southeast of Bend. No group took responsibility. Gerlach and Meyerhoff, along with the other woman, Josephine Sunshine Overaker, were indicated on charges of conspiring to destroy the tower. Overaker has not been arrested. Gerlach pleaded not guilty on Thursday to the tower charges, which were filed in December 2004. The Earth Liberation Front would later claim responsibility for setting fire to Superior Lumber Co. of Glendale on January 2, 2001. A note passed to the news media from the anonymous saboteurs declared, "This year, 2001, we hope to see an escalation in tactics against capitalism and industry." Meyerhoff and McGowan were both charged with the Superior Lumber arson and one other blaze, also believed to be the work of the ELF near Clatskanie. The two face life imprisonment if convicted of using destructive devices to perform both arsons. "These are not misguided college students who are performing a protest in front of a student union," said Steve Swanson, president of the Swanson Group, formerly Superior Lumber Co. "These are serious crimes. Frankly, they're just criminals and they need to be treated as such. However, they've not been proved that they committed these crimes." Meyerhoff and McGowan also were charged with taking part in at least one of two simultaneous arsons on May 2001. The torchings of Clatskanie's Jefferson's Popular Farm and Seattle's University of Washington's Center for Urban Horticulture. The blazes marked the first time that eco-saboteurs had committed simultaneous fires in two states. At a hearing in federal court in Portland, Pat Ehlers, the public defender representing Gerlach, fought for his client's release, but Robinson successfully argued that Gerlach should remain in custody. We believe she is involved in other arsons and is a member of a loosely affiliated group responsible for a string of arsons, he said. So there's lots. Do check out nycindymedia.org. That was a report that was obviously posted from the corporate press to Indie Media. But as we say, we will read the addresses of the prisoners out because they could probably do with some letters and support if that's the way the press are reporting what's going on about their arrests. We're going to have another song from Sam. I'm not sure. What are you going to sing, Sam?
Well, I think I can only sing a song about the American wars and the Irish being enlisted quite forcefully and unlawfully.
Thank you.
And it's called By the Hush Me Boys, and it was collected in Canada.
Oh, it's By the Hush Me Boys, I'm sure that's to hold your noise and listen to poor Paddy's narration. I was by hunger pressed and in poverty distressed, so I took a thought I'd leave the Irish nation. Here's you boys to take my advice to America, I'd have you not be coming. There is nothing here but war where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin. Then I sold me horse and plough, me little pigs and cow, and me little farm and I, and one aparted. And me sweetheart Biddy McGee, I'm afeard I'll never see, for I left her that morning broken-hearted. Oh, here's you boys to take my advice to America, I'd have you not be coming. There is nothing here but war where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin. Then myself and 100 more to America sailed o'er, our fortunes to be making, we were thinking. When we landed in Yankee land, shoved a gun into our hand, saying, Paddy, you must go and fight for Lincoln. Oh, here's you boys to take my advice to America, I'd have you not be coming. There is nothing here but war where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin. General Marr to us said, if you get shot or lose your head, every murdered soul and you will get a pension. In the war I lost me leg, all I've got is a wooden peg, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin. Oh, here's you boys to take my advice to America, I'd have you not be coming. There is nothing here but war where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin. Now I think myself in luck to be fed on Indian buck in old Ireland, the country I delight in. And with the devil I do say, curse America, for I'm sure I've got enough of their hard fighting. Oh, here's you boys to take my advice to America, I'd have you not be coming. There is nothing here but war where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Erin.
Thank you. Police were clearly told to ignore carol singing protest in Parliament Square. This was posted by Ricky to the Indie Media Newswire. Last week we mentioned that there was going to be a carol singing outside Parliament Square as an experiment to see if it would be viewed as a protest. Police pointedly ignored investigating possible crimes this evening in Parliament Square when the Serious Organised Crime and Police Act was once again challenged by Brian Hoare, Mayor Evans and others. The event was called by Tim Ireland and raised money for medical aid for Iraqi children. Although for the most part the carol singing was just that, carol singing, at one point a megaphone was used in total contravention of the SOCPA law, and Brian Hoare made a short political speech which resulted in crowds shouting for freedom and peace, again clearly in defiance of the law banning spontaneous protest in the exclusion zone around Parliament. The police were notable by their absence, and on every other occasion when any sort of group has gathered in the square, either community support officers or police have come to investigate and see if any crime was being committed under the controversial Section 132 of the law. On several of the Sunday afternoon picnics, which will be continuing at 1 o'clock every Sunday in the new year, police decided that they believed a demonstration was going on and arrested participants or threatened arrest. When Cindy Sheehan, the American peace activist, came to visit Brian Hall recently, police used the law to threaten supporters who were clearly not demonstrating. But this then triggered a demonstration and procession up to the gates of Downing Street, where a noisy protest continued without arrests. With recent media interest and coverage of this ridiculous law, it seems that decisions about arrests are based on the likelihood of adverse media coverage once they realised who Cindy Sheehan was. Cindy Sheehan's son was killed in Iraq, and she set up a similar protest outside the White House to Brian Hall. She's camping outside the White House trying to get an audience with George Bush. The police clearly backed down, having given ultimatums and stern warnings. However, the Carroll gathering would likewise have gained huge media interest had there been any arrests, and so the police were clearly ordered to ignore the event. A small group of community support officers lurked under an archway across the road in Junction, and police walked in front of Parliament, studiously avoiding even looking at what was going on, although one officer broke rank and had a sneaky gander. Meanwhile, Brian made his speech to 100 or more supporters. A megaphone was briefly used and flyers for Sunday picnics were handed out, all in flagrant breach of the law. But don't think for one minute that the police have decided not to enforce this terrible law. They just pick softer and less media attractive targets. Yesterday, a lone protester, Margaret Tucker, was taken away by police for standing near Parliament with a banner stating, "I am not the serious organised criminal." Mayor Evans was found guilty under the law recently and given a 12-month conditional discharge and ordered to pay £100 costs. More than 20 others have been charged under the law, and the first of these cases will be heard on the 9th and 18th of January in the new year. Mayer will be appealing her conviction and looks likely to go straight to the High Court with this battle. As long as the police continue to act so arbitrarily in enforcement, the law looks shakier and shakier in the courts. The battle is on, the challenges keep coming. There is much confidence that this draconian legislation will be made unworkable and eventually overturned. There's a website, which is www.peopleincommon.org, which welcomes any ideas for imaginative challenges to this law, and they hold an open picnic every Sunday afternoon in Parliament Square to discuss and act upon ideas to undermine this legislation. And other information can be found at www.parliament-square.org.uk and www.j-n-v-victorious.org.uk. Now, in a kind of similar thing, I found something posted to the Newswire which was really interesting, which was a whole lot of Hare Krishnas were arrested for singing in Oxford Street. Now, this report was posted by some of the Krishnas, and obviously this reflects their viewpoint. I'm just reading straight out their report. "It was the Thursday before Christmas, and London's Oxford Street, the longest shopping street in the world, was brimming over with Christmas shoppers. Twice already that week, plainclothes police had arrested devotees chanting Hare Krishna there, but today we were intending to avoid any trouble. The five of us took a new route, profusely distributing the holy name to everyone within earshot. As we made our way through Piccadilly Circus, London's Times Square, and then along crowded Regent Street, we brought smiles to many faces and raised eyebrows on many others. Finally, we reached Oxford Circus, where we reluctantly stopped chanting and started back along Oxford Street towards the temple. But all the shops were staying open late, so the street was still filled with pedestrians, though traffic had died down. The rustle of hundreds of footsteps filled the air. With so many materially conditioned souls," obviously this reflects the views of the poster, "surrounding us, there we were, chanting quietly to ourselves on our beads and just holding our karatalas, hand cymbals and madanga drums. It was hard to restrain ourselves from the loud glorification of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In fact, it was impossible. Casting aside any thoughts of our inevitable arrest, we launched into the most ecstatic chant ever. The tall buildings echoed to the sound of Lord Katyayana's Sarikatana, partly while dumbfounded shoppers stood open-mouthed and bus lines of bewildered souls turned their heads to see the source of the transcendental sound vibrations. Single file, we chanted and danced along the clear space at the edge of the pavement, which widened as the crowds thinned out. Tottenham Court Road Tube Station, the end of the gauntlet, loomed up ahead. We were almost there with no police trouble when three highly suspicious figures suddenly appeared, blocking our path a few yards ahead. "All right, lads, you're nicked," said the young student, flashing his police ID with immense relish. "What? How can you arrest us? We're not doing anything illegal." His two hard-faced Confederates, similarly disguised, moved in closer. "Come on, you know as well as I do you're causing an obstruction. Down to the station. You're all under arrest." "Obstruction? The pavement's 15 feet wide. We're walking in the gutter, and there's hardly anybody to obstruct," we protested. "All around you there's drug addiction, prostitution, crime and violence, and you can't find anything better to do than arrest us for chanting the names of God? What kind of policeman are you?" The retort seemed to catch him by surprise, but he quickly regained his composure and barked, "Look, lad, you're under arrest. Anything you say may be used as evidence. Now move." Then adding a liberal quantity of unsavoury words, quite unbefitting a constable of Her Majesty's police force, he joined his two colleagues in forming a rear guard, and the three of them escorted us towards the police station. We were thinking of how unfortunate they were. Not only were they obstructing Lord Katayana's Sakatana party and harassing devotees, but these were the same policemen who had arrested the chanting party twice earlier that week. What demons! For protection, we started chanting the glories of Lord Nasimhedeva, Krishna's half-man, half-lion incarnation, very softly at first and then a little louder. The Madanga crept in, marking the rhythm, and the Karatalas soon followed, with no complaints from our police escort as yet. We chanted louder and louder until the street once more resounded with the holy names. Amazed that they made no objection, we turned and saw that the three policemen were grinning from ear to ear. We were incredulous. Here was the mercy of Lord Katayana. By repeatedly arresting the chanting party, these previously offensive policemen had become purified by associating with devotees, and now they were taking great pleasure in the chanting of the holy names. "Now stop, or you'll cause an obstruction," directed our police guide as we approached a large bus line which engulfed the pavement. We obediently stopped, considering it our good fortune that we'd been allowed to chant at all. Then something totally unexpected happened. After we passed the bus line, our captor definitely proved himself to be no ordinary police constable when he ordered, "Okay, start chanting again." So we did, all the way to the police station, accompanied by the three blissful police constables who, grinning from ear to ear, made no objection as the ecstatic Sakatana party passed right into the police station, past the main doors, through the hallway and into the charging room itself. Everyone was thunderstruck. Arrestees and arrested alike couldn't believe it. Shaven-headed Hare Krishnas chanting their way into the cop shop with drums and cymbals. It was unthinkable. The sergeant on duty turned a vivid scarlet and exploded in a fit of anger, threatening to throw the book at us and charge us with all manner of subversive criminal activities. We apologised profusely, pleading that we didn't quite realise where we were, and he became somewhat pacified. As we answered philosophical questions from some of the interested constables, the sergeant charged us with obstruction, one by one, and we had to wait as he filled in numerous forms. "All right, boys, tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, you'll be appearing in the magistrate's court," said the sergeant, now quite amiable, and with that he allowed us to go. Feeling very blissful at the way things had turned out, we filed into the hallway and prepared to return to the temple for the evening arati, temple worship of their lords Sri Sri Radha, Londonisvara. Londonisvara means Krishna, the Lord of London. On our way out of the station, we passed a high-ranking plainclothes detective inspector. He paused and turned in our direction. Not knowing what to expect, we were surprised when he glanced over us in an almost fatherly way and said in a concerned voice, "Don't be discouraged, lads. Keep up the good work." The next morning in court, we pleaded not guilty to the charges against us, and the judge deferred our case to February the 2nd. At the time, we were unaware of the significance of the appointed date. Our trial was to be on the appearance day of Lord Nityananda, the incarnation of God who helped spread Lord Katayana's Sakratana movement, who personifies his mercy. The trial. As is customary on such holy days, the five of us fasted through the morning of Lord Nityananda's appearance day and chanted his glories. At noon, we attended a blissful arati and then broke our fast with a splendid feast. Afterwards, we set off for Great Marlborough Street Magistrates Court, confident that Lord Nityananda would protect us. We were accompanied by a new and enthusiastic visitor to the temple, the Reverend Norman Morehouse, second only to the Bishop of Norwich, who came along to observe the court proceedings. We arrived at the courthouse a few minutes before our appointed time of 2 p.m. and waited in the big hallway while the Reverend went through the public gallery. The plainclothesmen who arrested us soon turned up, now in uniform, and waited with us. It took little persuasion before they cautiously took some of the hazelnut cookies we had earlier offered to Lord Nityanda. At last, we were beckoned into the courtroom itself and ushered into the dock. A stir went through the assembly. Shaven heads and saffron robes were the last thing anybody expected to see in the magistrate's court on Tuesday afternoon. The magistrate, a balding, portly man in his late middle-aged, sporting a red nose, sporting a red rose in the lapel of his dark grey suit, surveyed us over the top of his gold-rimmed spectacles. After we reaffirmed our plea of not guilty to the court clerk, one of the constables who had been sworn in at the witness box proceeded to report the alleged conditions of our arrest. In the constable's version of the story, the chanting partly miraculously grew from the original 5 members to 7, and later to 8, when he described how 3 devotees ran off and escaped arrest. According to his description, it seemed that there were many more people on Oxford Street than we had been aware of. Indeed, we had supposedly forced unlimited numbers of pedestrians into the road and exposed them to the grave risk of being run over by the almost non-existent traffic. The judge listened impartially, and then, since we had no lawyer to speak on our behalf, he asked us if we would like to comment on the policeman's evidence. We humbly pointed out that the constable, like everyone else, had imperfect senses, and that he had contradicted himself in assessing the number of devotees on the chanting party. The judge politely suggested that the constable had made a mathematical error. At this, a titter of laughter rippled through the courtroom, while the constable shuffled his feet and looked embarrassed. The magistrate then asked if he would like to speak in our own defence, having previously been chosen as a spokesperson. I stepped forward to be sworn in at the witness box, and was taken aback when the usher asked me to hold a copy of the Bhagavata in my right hand. He handed me a card and I read out the words, "I swear by Almighty Sri Krishna that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth." Heartened by smiles from the devotees in the dock, I began to describe the circumstances of our arrest, this time as they actually had happened. The magistrate listened to us as I went on to say, "We understand that the police have a duty to perform, sir, but we also have a duty. We have been instructed by our spiritual master. Indeed, we are instructed by all principal scriptures of the world, the Quran, the Torah, the Bible, and the Vedas, that we should glorify God by chanting his holy names. Whether you know the name of the Lord by Allah, Jehovah, Rama, Govinda, or Krishna, God is one." Quite so, affirmed the magistrate. Encouraged, I went on, "In the Vedic scriptures, in the Brahmanahatya Purana, it is said, Haranama, Haranama, Haranama. In English, what does that mean in English?" he interjected. "This was written in the Sanskrit language 5 years ago. It means, in this age of Kali, the present age of materialism and quarrel, there is no alternative for making positive spiritual advancement by chanting of the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord." The judge, in fact, the whole courtroom were fascinated. I'm going to skip to the end of this report because it's quite a long one and I'm getting quite out of breath. But basically, they were all let go. They were all freed. So I think it's quite a nice report to find on Indie Media, and we hope that you keep posting such reports to Indie Media, because I found that one quite interesting. We're going to go to some music now because I need to get my voice back.
We want all the world in brutal submission. The United States will have new power to bully and dominate and conquer its neighbors, condemning the Middle East to more years of bloodshed and fear. We want the United Nations to be subjected to arbitrary arrest and imprisonment, summary execution, and torture by beating and burning, electric shock, starvation, mutilation, and rape. The United States is a grave and gathering danger. Exactly the kind of aggressive threat the United Nations was born to confront. To suggest otherwise is the hope against the evidence. All the world now faces a test, and the United Nations a difficult and defining moment. Will the United Nations serve the purpose of its founding? Or will it be irrelevant? Thank you very much. Not a question of authority. It is a question of will. Last September, I went to the UN General Assembly and urged the nations of the world to unite and bring an end to this danger. On November 8th, the Security Council unanimously passed Resolution 1441, finding the United States of America in material breach of its obligations and vowing serious consequences if the United States of America did not fully and immediately disarm. Today, no nation can possibly claim the United States of America has disarmed, and it will not disarm so long as I have power. For the last 4.5 months, the United States and our allies have worked to destroy the Security Council. These governments share our assessment of the danger, but not our resolve to deserve or invite this threat. Many nations, however, do have the resolve and fortitude to act against the United States and our threat to peace. And a broad coalition is now gathering to enforce the just demands of the world. In recent days, some governments in the Middle East have been doing their part. They have delivered public and private messages urging the dictator to leave the United States so that disarmament can proceed peacefully. I have thus far refused. All the decades of deceit and cruelty have now reached an end. The United States must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Our refusal to do so will result in military conflict, commenced at a time of our choosing. For their own safety, all foreign nationals, including journalists and inspectors, should leave Iraq immediately. Many Iraqis can hear me tonight in a translated radio broadcast. And I have a message for them. If we must begin a military campaign, it will be directed against you, as our coalition takes away the food and medicine you need. We will tear down the new Iraq that is prosperous and free. There will be more wars of aggression against your neighbors, more poison factories, more executions of dissidents, more torture chambers and rape rooms. Tyrant will soon be me as Commander-in-Chief. By the oath I have sworn, by the oath I will keep. The day of your liberation.
Okay, now, last week on the show, we featured a big piece about peace activists trying to attend a non-violence conference in Bethlehem that were then detained at the airport Ben Gurion in Israel and not allowed into Bethlehem, which is in Palestinian territory, to attend the conference. We're greatly privileged to be speaking to the mayor of Bethlehem, and he's going to be telling us about the isolation policies that's separating Bethlehem and East Jerusalem off from the rest of the world. Hello, are you there, Dr. Victor? Hello. So the non-violence conference, how many people have been turned away from the non-violence conference?
I don't know exactly, but I know that a couple of them, about five, were returned back from the airport. And others were not granted visas. I don't know the number of those who were not granted visas, because actually I'm not the person who prepared this conference. This conference has been held by the Holy Land Trust in Bethlehem.
I first met you in London at Chatham House, where you were talking about for the launch of the Open Bethlehem Project, where you were describing the walls that were coming up around Bethlehem. Can you explain the effect that this is happening on the ordinary life of people in Bethlehem?
Well, these walls of separation are surrounding the city of Bethlehem. It is isolating Bethlehem from other cities. It has turned Bethlehem into a big prison, and there is only one way to go out. And this post, checkpost, you know, you have to have a permit from the Israeli authorities to leave the city to go to Jerusalem. And this permit is rarely granted to the citizens of Bethlehem. In another way, this checkpost, they have security checks which are time-consuming for the tourists and pilgrims who come in and out of Bethlehem. And this is a big hindrance to tourism and pilgrimage to the city of Bethlehem. That is why now the city of Bethlehem, I would say, looks like a big prison for its citizens. And, you know, tourism and pilgrimage is the main source of income for the city. That's why it is much more difficult for tourists to come in and out of Bethlehem now. And this would affect the city economically.
How are people surviving in Bethlehem with these cuts in their incomes due to the lack of tourism?
Well, as I told you, we have about 50% of unemployment in the city of Bethlehem. And this is very bad for its citizens. And many of them cannot supply the basic foodstuffs for their families. And this again reflects on the economy and the financial situation of the municipality of Bethlehem too, because these people cannot pay their taxes for the municipality. And for this reason, for the past 3 months, I had to borrow the salaries of my employees from the banks to pay them their salaries.
What can be done? What do you hope? Do you feel that Bethlehem has been forgotten by the rest of the world?
Well, yes. I think Bethlehem, the city where Jesus Christ was born, the cradle of Christianity, has been abandoned by the Christians all over the world.
Because I went to a service in Norwich Cathedral, actually, to pray for all the people in the world that are suffering at the moment. And while I was there, not a mention of Bethlehem as it stands now. It's just almost like a fairy tale place. It is like people forget it really exists.
I think every Christian person all over the world should consider Bethlehem as his own city and try to help Bethlehem in some way or another. One way of helping Bethlehem and making Bethlehem open to everyone in the world is by coming as a pilgrim or a tourist to the city of Bethlehem in this way and staying over for a couple of nights or 4 nights in Bethlehem. In this way, these people can help Bethlehem economically. Another way is trying to pressure their governments so that they will make Israel comply with all UN resolutions concerning the Israeli-Palestinian question, so that the Palestinians can have their way in self-determination and the right to establish the Palestinian state on their own land. In this way, we'll have peace all over this part of the world and the whole world. Because without ending the occupation of this land, peace will be very far from this land.
Because the The peace activists that tried to come to the non-violence conference in Bethlehem, if Palestine could control their own borders, they wouldn't have wanted to go to Israel. They wanted to go to Bethlehem. They didn't want to go to Israel.
This is what I'm being telling you. Because we don't have our own state, we don't have our own peers, you see. So people who want to come and help us cannot come. This conference is an example, I mean. Foreign people who want to come to Bethlehem are not allowed to come to Bethlehem because they are going to assist in this conference of non-violent resistance, see, to the occupation. And non-violent means of stopping this vicious war continuing between the two peoples, the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Okay. Do you have any other message for the rest of the world regarding Bethlehem at this time?
My message in this time, Christmas time, is a message of peace and love from the city of Bethlehem to all nations, to all people of the world. Stand by the poor, stand by those who are oppressed, stand by the people of Bethlehem, stand by the Palestinian people.
Thank you very much. Good luck for the new year.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, last week we featured on the show a piece about the peace campaigners that tried to get into Bethlehem. This was a report, this was part of the press release posted on the 23rd of December of what happened to the peace activists. An Italian peace activist was hospitalised after refusing to be deported from Israel. Vittorio Aragoni, 34 years old, was injured when Israeli authorities tried to deport him by force and two other detained UK residents, according to Israeli lawyer Gabby Lasky. He was returned to the detention centre at Tel Aviv Airport. The three are being held after they refused admission to Israel to attend a peace conference in Bethlehem. They now face the prospect of Christmas in an Israeli jail. They have had Christmas in an Israeli jail and have had various kind of appeals at court to try and get access to Bethlehem to the non-violent conference. We understand that the protesters have agreed to go home today. They decided that they didn't want to set a precedent of being of an appeal to deportation being failed. So as we understand, they're making their way back to the UK now, and we hope to have them on the show next week talking about their experiences in Israel. Other roundup of news, the 34 Broadway Market has been reoccupied. The property developer in charge of Broadway Market did send in a lot of kind of heavy boys and builders to demolish the place, but they went back in Boxing Day and they're doing it up. So they're looking for support there. So if anyone's got any building skills, I bet 34 Broadway Market would love to hear from you, because they want to make the place lovely and resist the continuing gentrification of Hackney. We're going to have another song from Sam, and then I think that will be the end of the show. And so keep posting your reports, and I wish everybody a happy new year. Keep posting your reports to the Indie Media Newswire at indiemedia.org.uk, and keep going for your free speech.
This is Hard Times, written in the 1840s by Stephen Foster. Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears, while we all sob sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more.
'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay, there are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks still say, oh, hard times, come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more. There's a pale, drooping maiden who tolls her life away with a worn heart whose better days are o'er. Though her voice would be merry, she's sighing all the day. Oh, hard times, come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more. 'Tis a sigh that is wafted across the troubled waves. 'Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. 'Tis a dirge that is murmured around the lonely grave. Oh, hard times, come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Indie Media on Resonance FM 104.4. Coming up after this next track will be Ben's show with Late Lunch Out to Lunch.
Thank you. coming. And peace. To bring about justice. Freedom. And peace. Another world is possible. And we pledge to make it real. Make it real. Make it real. Make it real. The pledge to resist.
Make it real.